morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I am Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Tuesday, September 19th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Eastman Financial Report. We're happy to have you on WVW TV, which is a great alternative network. If you're looking for an alternative point of view from the normal mainstream media, WVW provides some tremendous programming. Been around since 2006, and we're happy to bring you our not only the Eastman Financial Report, but many fine programs that helps you broaden your perspective and gives you a different insight into very complex issues that we all face today. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to you for a half hour each day about the economy and all of the intricacies therein. Of course, we are bombarded daily with financial news, and a lot of viewers are looking for ways to better understand the news and headlines that they see and read. And hopefully my program is shedding some light on that and giving you some useful critical thinking tools that you may find helpful in working your way through the great jungle of the financial world. Because, when you think about it, we all have a personal responsibility for our own financial future. And more information is always better when you're dealing with the complexities of modern finance and modern investing. And that's that we've really come a long way in the last 100 years from basic understanding of earning money and putting it away in the cookie jar and then having savings, to basically income becoming a stream, a revenue stream, and then, there's consumption, and then of course you're trying to save some up and then make wise investments. And there is just a smorgasbord of opportunity for places to put your money. And on every street corner, there's somebody that's more than willing to sell you advice and help you become better off financially. And then the question is, how good are they at doing that? So this is what this program is all about. Of course, we are a sponsored network. We rely on the kind and generous donations of viewers like yourself, and we also have sponsors who sponsor our programming. And I'm blessed to have a sponsor, Swiss America Trading, which is an American company based in Arizona. And effectively, they are, as I like to say, a fine purveyor of precious metals. But what that means is that they are a dealer in precious metals, and they make a market in tangible precious metals. And if you're looking at expanding your personal investment portfolio, there may be a place in that portfolio for precious metals. And this is a great week to hear this news because what they're doing right now, they say that every cloud has a silver lining, and that's a really great optimistic view. But today we're going to prove that. And Swiss America has come up with a special that they're running on silver walking Liberty half dollars. These are bullion coins that I've talked about. They're minted by, governments or mints that are specialists in preparing gold and silver coins that have a high content in gold or silver, and they're warranted to have that content. Anyway, silver walking Liberty halves are a great way to invest in the precious metals market, and they're running this incredible special. It's $13.50 each, and that includes delivery. Now, there's a cap at 250 of these per person, and they're only available until they're sold out, until supplies last. But you really, if you're thinking about adding precious metals, this is a great way to do that. And of course, as we now approach the great holiday spending season, which I'm going to talk about later, but if you're looking for a gift for somebody that has the potential to go up in value rather than end up in a landfill, you really might want to consider buying some of these coins at $13.50 a piece, which is an incredible price, and free shipping to your door. So give that some thought. But certainly, Swiss America is available to help you out in with respect to any type of purchase of these bullion coins. Give them a call at 1-800-519-6271. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you, or you can go to their website and you can buy online. If you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you use that promo code, you'll get that deal. And it's $13.50 per coin. And, it's a heck of a stocking stuffer, as they say, or whatever. But you might want to really think about that, because we're going to be talking a lot about inflation today and every day. And one of the things that you want to do is think about buying things that go up in value rather rather than end up in a landfill and become valueless. This is a great opportunity. So again, give Swiss America a call, 800-519-6271, and take advantage of this opportunity because, you know, precious metals are marked to market, and this is an opportunity because of their supply that they're selling these things at a great price, $13.50 delivered to your house. You don't have to pay shipping. That's a big deal. So give them a call. Give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, and take advantage of that special today. I mean, it won't last forever. Who knows? I can't tell you when they're going to pull that promotion. So anyway, let's jump into the news today. There's a lot of information going on. And of course, today is the big day, September 19th, which is the day the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee is meeting in Washington to take a look at the status and state of the economy and make some serious decisions with respect to monetary policy. And I've been talking about this now for months. And of course, what happens is the seven governors of the Federal Reserve System, which are appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, they're the ones that run the Federal Reserve. It's the board of directors. And then the president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank will be there, permanent seat. And then four of the 11 presidents of the regional banks, they rotate, and whoever's on the rotation will be there as well. And I'm sure other people go, staff economists and all. And the idea is, should they raise the interest rates to slow the economy, or should they lower the interest rates to speed things up? And it all has to do with using that monetary tool. Because that's the thing the Federal Reserve does. It uses monetary tools to impact the larger economy. And that's one theory of thought. And it was kind of interesting. I talked about this a couple of days in a row. And today I happened to be reading a major financial newspaper this morning. And lo and behold, you know, you don't think for a minute because you're watching this program on a smaller network and it's just some obscure finance program that you're not getting current news, because I'm still liking to believe I am flattered to be setting a trendsetter in financial news. How many times I say something and the next day or two I'm reading about the same thing in the big time newspapers. It's kind of cool. But anyway, you're not lacking for knowledge by watching this program, and I get the whole thing done in a half hour. You don't have to spend 2 hours reading news. But anyway, the point is, the Federal Reserve has this monetary tool, and it's raise the rates or lower the rates, raise the rates, lower the rates, pull the punch bowl or push the punch bowl back to the center of the table and everybody has fun. Well, there's also a counterbalancing argument that's emerging, and I think it's interrelated and wrapped within, in through and under the concept of inflation. Lutherans will catch that one. It's wrapped into the idea of monetary policy and inflation, and that is the fiscal policy of the drivers of inflation tend not to be monetary in nature. And we're seeing a story this morning, the United Auto Workers strike may expand because the unions they did the historic thing of striking all three of the major players, Ford, General Motors, and whatever Chrysler's called, I'm blanking on Stellaris or something. It's Ford, General Motors, and at least from American perspective, Chrysler or Jeep. But that isn't going well because the laborers walked out and the corporations are digging in their heels and we're not going to yield. And it's a typical labor negotiation. It's been going on since the beginning of labor. But at the end of the day, they've announced that they're going to expand this because United Auto Workers tend to also unionize shops that are parts suppliers to the auto factories and anybody who's a vendor. Because the deal is, you know, we're a unionized company. If you're a parts supplier to General Motors or Ford or Stellaris, whatever, then those tend to be unionized as well. And the idea is if those strike, those smaller parts supplier companies take a much bigger hit because they don't have this massive balance sheet, billions of dollars in capital reserves. They hurt sooner and louder, and basically then they'll call and say, oh, don't strike me, I'm a little supplier. So what it's telling you is the cost push inflation driven by labor isn't going away anytime soon. And you know, you can't blame labor because, you know, you go to the gas pump and we're at the highest gasoline prices this time of the year in history. We have this big bulge in the summer where everybody's driving to Yellowstone or whatever, and then it kind of cools off when you go back to school and things calm down. Well, gas prices prices have not cooled off. And we know that the Russians and the Saudis have cut back on their production because the Saudi version of the world is $100 a barrel because they need $100 a barrel to build out their economy over in Saudi Arabia. And of course, the Russians are having a great old time just poking at the West because of this Ukraine situation. So we're seeing a real cost push in fuel prices, oil prices. And keep in mind, oil is basically, it breaks down into a number of fractals, okay? Gasoline is one major component because we all have personal cars. We put the gasoline in, we drive around, personal mobility. But also, and I mentioned this earlier, diesel fuel is critically important. The ships that come from China to Long Beach, California, they're not sailing ships anymore. These are diesel-powered hauling across the ocean. You can imagine how much diesel fuel it takes to run a boat across the Pacific Ocean. And then when it gets there, the stuff gets loaded by great big machines that run on diesel into trains that run on diesel or trucks that run on diesel. And off the stuff goes to warehouses. And it's not until that sort of last mile when stuff stops using diesel and maybe shifts to gasoline, maybe not, maybe it's the last mile in a truck. But the point is diesel permeates the supply chain. It is a critical number within the supply chain. So as oil prices, a barrel of raw crude oil goes up, diesel prices are going up. And that means that every last thing you buy has shipping factored in. And that's why I mentioned with Swiss America, when you buy the coins for $13.50, it's delivered to you, includes shipping. You're not paying for the shipping from Swiss America to your mailbox. They are, okay? But it's in that cost. So it's somewhere, somebody's paying for that shipping, okay? It's just that if you buy the coins at $13.50, it's not gonna be you. It's gonna shift that cost, and that's why it's a good deal. So even if you went to your local coin shop to buy, you'd have to drive your car, and that would cost you fuel as well. So I would call Swiss America today and get some of those silver halves, because that's a deal at $13.50 plus shipping. And anyway, let's get back to shipping and costs. So all of these costs are pushing, the fuel costs are permeating our cost infrastructure, as and then labor reacts to that. You said, man, you know, it costs money for my workers to fill up their diesel trucks or their, you know, their pickup trucks or their gasoline pickup trucks, get to work. And at the same time, when the workers go to the grocery store, it's like, oh man, you know, you got to have another 50, 60, 70 bucks in your pocket or more, depending on the size of your family. That puts pressure, and nobody wants to go into a job and work those difficult, complex jobs in a high-tech manufacturing plant. I mean, these are complicated processes that these workers do. This isn't, you know, I don't want to belittle burger flippers, but the point is there's some technology and science involved. They're valuable jobs. And if you want people to perform those jobs, you have to pay them. It's like, you know, don't muzzle the ox on the threshing room floor, as it's written in the book of Proverbs. You got to pay your workers, and you have to pay them enough so that it's a meaningful job. So you're getting a lot of cost push right now. And of course, the UAW may be playing into the fact at the open market committee's meeting today, because of course when they, you know, when they get to that fancy conference room, they're all sitting around reading the, you know, the expensive financial newspapers, and they see these headlines, like, holy smokes, we're gonna do something. And a lot of that is posturing and political, because you've got to get these decision makers to get off the dime and make a decision. And the FOMC has said, we're not gonna raise the rates, because, you know, we had the Boston president came out and she said, well, we gotta raise the rates and kill inflation because, you know, people in Boston are suffering. Then we had the president in Atlanta coming along and saying, you know, maybe we ought to just hold steady. Let's just wait and see what happens. Well, his view prevailed, at least with the signaling. And nobody knows what's going to happen at the FOMC today and tomorrow. I mean, it's like, you know, waiting for the white smoke to come out of the chimney or something. We'll find out. But the smart money is saying that the Fed will hold, because they probably went too far. And you can see that in the decline in the housing industry. And of course, that's another interesting problem. You see, the Federal Reserve, but fiddling around with the interest rates, has a very, very strong impact on the housing market. And traditionally in the American economy, the building and housing and construction area tended to be the one of the largest segments. It's not as big as retail, but it's a big segment of unionized jobs, usually, you know, the trades. This was material. So if you could ramp that up, the economy is going to do pretty well if you're building housing. And if you cool it down, the economy will slow down. And of course, of all of the industries, when the Fed fiddles around with the interest rates, housing takes the biggest hit. And that's why the housing data that's coming out today, and I'm sure it's coming out today in the hopes that the people sitting around the breakfast table at the FOMC are reading the newspaper saying, this is conflicting data. Because it's really hard to read the numbers because the interest rates affect real estate, construction, and development. It's a slower process. Real estate requires somebody has to buy a piece of land. And then they have to convince the city or the municipality to zone it properly. And it has to be subdivided. And then you have to put in utilities and roads. And the infrastructure has to go in. And then you have to sell off the lots. And then somebody has to build a house. It takes, 6 months to a year to build a house. And then you sell it. It takes a long time. So if you're going to put pressure on the real estate industry, starting when they did last March, January, March, they're starting to jack up the rates, we're starting to see that trickle. So what you see are these very volatile numbers in these reports. Like housing starts month over month are down 11.3%. That's collapsing, it's terrible. But keep in mind, it's that volatility of a housing start is when a shovel goes in the ground. That means your permits are in place, the financing's in place, somebody's purchased the house, so you unless you're building on spec. But then when you look at forward permits, they're still up about 7%. Permits in the pipeline are up 7%, but shovels in the ground are down 11%. So if you're reading these numbers, you're thinking, well, I don't know, is it going up? Is it going down? Unless you really understand and analyze housing, you are going to have difficulty figuring out what it means. And because of the volatility and the lag, there's a volatility component and a lag component, housing numbers are kind of mysterious. So what we do know is with housing, with interest rates high at 7.5% or whatever for a mortgage, the housing market is going to be slower than if it were lower interest rates. We also know at 7.5% interest, building multifamily rental units is riskier because the cost of money is higher. And of course, with those things are financed to a great extent the same way that commercial real estate is. Shorter notes with a balloon payment, basically you refinance and you roll over. And that's oftentimes they'll pull money out and refinance. And that's a thing in investment real estate. But when that velocity slows and that mechanism slows, then that industry slows as well. So if you look at permits for multifamily, that's really down big time because it's a gamble. And apartment development is in American history has been notoriously boom and bust. I mean, they overbuild apartments, money pours in, they build apartments, and then there's too many apartments, and then there's vacancies, and then there's the foreclosures, and then the bottom fishing guys come in, they buy it on the cheap. This is very cyclical. So when you're looking at these numbers, you don't want to just say, oh, housing is up, housing is down, because it's very, very complex. And all of these pressures are going into the FOMC's decision-making today. They say, all right, well, how's housing doing? Well, it's up, it's down, it's this way, it's sideways, who knows? But we do know unit per unit, multifamily housing is slowing down because it was real hot last year. And we know that it's very difficult to put up a subdivision and get housing built, especially when there's 7.5% interest. The demand for housing in general has subsided. So it becomes risky. You keep raising interest rates. How much further do you push housing, off the cliff? And at that point, it starts to really impact the economy. Now, the economists will talk about soft landing. If the Fed gets it just right, you put the punch bowl exactly in the right spot in the middle of the banquet table, man, a soft landing would be great. It's only happened once, maybe back in 1995. And I think President Bill Clinton was almost blessed with economic miracles of the only alleged soft landing that ever happened in the history and alleged balanced budget. And I give him credit where credit's due, but that doesn't happen often. And I don't think a soft landing by fiddling with the interest rates is going to be realistic, especially when you have these non-monetary pushes in the economy driven the same way it was driven in the 1970s. When OPEC happened and they cranked up the price of oil for political reasons, the American economy immediately went into stagnation. At the same time, prices were going up. That's why I call it stagnant inflation or stagflation, clever name. But the reality is a stagflation environment becomes terrifying, not only for that silo of the poor and then the middle class and then the rich people. For the poor, if it's stagnant, you can't find a job and the jobs that are available are much lower income than you'd like, and inflation is ripping along, you find yourself becoming very, very poor. And that's, of course, a political thing that nobody wants to see. And then also keep in mind, we are entering the crazy season of a national presidential campaign that's going to start in earnest probably like next week, because it's getting to be 1 year away from the presidential election. And this one will be guaranteed to be rather robust. So we'll be watching that. And of course, if you're the incumbent, assuming the incumbent, if you're the incumbent, you will want to have a happy, robust economy where there's a chicken in every pot and a Cadillac in every driveway. And, oh, America's great. Vote for me. Send me back to the White House. And if you're the opponent, you're going to say, oh, my gosh, the economy's in shambles. And it's time for a change. Remember, Bill Clinton's famous line, it's the economy, stupid. Now, I'm mentioning Bill Clinton because I think in historically there were some highlights. And I did not vote for him. I would not vote for him, but I give credit where credit's due, it was the economy, and that's something that every presidential candidate thinks about. I think when you think back to Ronald Reagan, who I of course did vote for because I was voting age back then, he said, "It's morning in America," and ask yourself this simple question: are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? And people think about, yeah, I guess I am better off today, or I'm not better off. And then they make a political decision based on economics. So what my point is, we're entering into once every 4 years, one out of every 4 years, economic stuff gets crazy, because what you're trying to do is create the illusion of either prosperity or the depths of malaise, like Teddy Kennedy said, a Great Depression, vote for me, or times are wonderful, vote for me. So we have to factor that in. And that's why we're venturing into, turbulent economic waters. And what's more scary about that, and this goes back to political risk, this is not a political show, I don't have an opinion as to who we should vote for, but, I do, but I'm not expressing it on television, okay? But the point is, when you are making economic decisions and you have this once every 4 year headwind, it's like a hurricane blowing through, you have to make wise decisions. And one of the problems we have is the $32, $33, or $34 trillion in debt overhang, federal debt, and that is really having an impact on the markets because it crowds out other debt, private sector debt. And at the same time, as the Federal Reserve continues to increase the interest rate, they're burning the very federal government that they're a part of. And with higher debt service, which is now approaching $1 trillion a year in debt service on the debt that's outstanding, all of that is highly inflationary. And it's not something that they can tweak by fiddling with the interest rates. It would be in the country's best interests if the Fed lowered the interest rates so the federal government paid less debt service and more of those dollars could go to public service and public goods and services rather than investors holding those bonds. And, you hear often that the national debt is meaningless because we owe it to ourselves. And there's a group of people that wander around and say that kind of stuff. And you have to marvel at their naivete, because I don't know anybody, from a savings bond that you give to your grandchild to, some big hedge fund that's sitting on $1 trillion, or let's say $1 billion in the federal bonds, every last dollar of federal debt is an asset on somebody else's balance sheet. We don't owe it to ourselves. The federal government owes that money to somebody. And if the federal government defaults, like, well, we owe it to ourselves, you got a nice road out of it, whoever's holding that bond, of course, this never happened in the history of the United States, will be angry, because it's an asset to me is a liability to you. And the federal government owes whoever borrowed that money all that money back plus interest. Now, there's this little sliver of bizarre, which, of course, is quantitative easing, where some of those bonds are owned by the Federal Reserve, and they just print up money and buy it and pump that money into the economy. and they sit on it. And if they cancel the bonds, that you don't have to pay us back. Just forget it. Keep the $7 trillion. You know what? That first of all, that's a small $7 trillion in an ocean of $34 trillion. But even that becomes an inflationary problem. So the complexities that we look at today in the year 2023, and the economic solutions dreamed up by radical fanatics in Germany and London back in the 1800s, or some guy living in a world of Downton Hall world of some English manor in the 1700s, Adam Smith, or even John Maynard Keynes, his theories of 100 years ago have effectively created a $34 trillion nightmare for the state. All of these economic theories become suspect. And ultimately what you find in economics, because economics, economos, is based upon human behavior. And human behavior hasn't changed since the creation. If you read scripture, if you read old texts, if you read stuff from the Babylonian days, on the clay tablets, people sound pretty much like they do today. Maybe they dress differently, they have better technology today, and maybe cleaner environment today. But at the end of the day, people are people. And ultimately what happens when you flood the zone with, $34 trillion in debt, you're going to end up with consequences. And of course, what you would want to do as an individual is, how do you protect yourself? I mean, think about the people in Italy when the Roman Empire collapsed and all the barbarians are coming in. Society's changing. It's changing forever, okay? Well, a lot of people who had the ability started to, put a little wall or fence around themselves in the form of a family. And those defense units became very important and led to basically 1,200, 1,300 years of feudalism. And the idea is, of course, that if you are smart, you will take steps to control your financial future in light of strong headwinds. We're in uncharted territory. Nobody's ever seen national debt this large without really bad consequences. And the question is, how does the federal government, proceed? And something will happen. I mean, this whole thing doesn't just stop. So that's why it's another good reason, maybe, when you're thinking about, what can I do to really protect myself from what will inevitably be an inflationary cycle in America? I mean, how do I preserve my buying power? Well, you might want to own land or a house or something tangible that will go up in value, because it's going up in value in relation to more dollars to buy the same thing. There's an old saying in New York, it's kind of cool, that says an ounce of gold will always buy a meal at a high-end restaurant for two and an expensive men's suit. I don't know if men wear suits anymore. But that metric it's kind of an interesting, one of those, coincidental metrics. But effectively, it's not that the meal and the suit, there's more dollars to buy them, but it's the same meal and the same suit. Okay, it's the same thing with, if you were to buy like an ounce of gold. I don't know what spot price is today, probably 1950-ish or something in that range, somewhere near $2,000. You buy this thing, you put it in the sock drawer, and then as inflation explodes, that coin is going to be worth more dollars, because as inflation comes in, it's going to take more paper dollars, which is just basically losing, each dollar is losing value. So it's going to take more of these paper things to buy this 1 ounce of gold. So that's the theory behind buying tangible coins. You buy them, you park them somewhere, and you forget about them. You don't trade them like a commodity. You can trade gold and silver in the commodities exchange. If you want to get crazy, and first of all, I suggest you go get a finance degree, and then you specialize in commodities and see how dangerous they are. Then perhaps you can buy forward contracts in gold and silver. That's risky. But one thing an average person can do is buy something that will go up in value. And of course, you could buy an antique, or you can buy, something that other people want and are willing to pay for. But there's risk in every place that you park your money. Let's say you buy artwork, and Picasso's hot this year, so you buy the Picasso, you put it in the sock drawer, and then 10 years from now you pull it out and nobody wants a Picasso. Well, you know, then he lost money. See, I don't think that'll happen, but it's an example, or maybe, you know, an antique of some sort, or, you know, it's almost like antique cars. You know, old guys will do that. They'll buy the car of their dreams, and when they all die off, nobody wants them. Anyway, that's a really good reason to think about buying tangibles. So give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, and take advantage of that $13.50 silver offer with no shipping. And you'll be happy you did. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you tomorrow. We'll keep an eye on the Fed, and we'll see what they do. Take care. Bye.